had like a face-to-face reality check with going viral and like putting your ideas out there. And even though they weren't out there for me, it was very new for a lot of people.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Multitudes. I'm Nicole, and today we have a really interesting conversation with Mandy Lee, a TikTok influencer, full-time freelancer, and content creator. Mandy is also known as Old Loser in Brooklyn, and I really enjoyed hearing about Mandy's story. And in this episode, we get into how Mandy started out in the corporate world and then moved to full-time freelancing. And we also talk about Mandy's experiences with going viral, plagiarism, and creating a niche. I love speaking with Mandy. She speaks with such candidness and sincerity about who she is and her ideas. And Mandy is a content creator, writer, and trend analyst in the world of fashion. And whether or not you're interested in fashion, this episode is really about her story and her first year of being a full-time creator. As with all of my episodes, take what resonates with you and leave the rest. And I hope you enjoy it. And as you can see in this title, this is part one of my conversation with Mandy, as we had a lot to talk about. And part two will come next week, where we get more into critical perspectives on the fashion industry and content creation as well. And as this is part one of the conversation, be sure to follow this podcast, Multitude, so you can see when part two comes out. And also be sure to follow Mandy at Old Loser in Brooklyn on Instagram and TikTok. And you can follow me on multitudes.podcast on Instagram and TikTok as well.
Hi, Nicole. So nice to be here.
I'm so excited to talk with you today. Mandy is a Brooklyn-based freelance fashion writer, trend researcher, and TikToker known for her analytical takes on fashion discourse, which centers around finding meaning behind trends. And her work has been featured in Vogue, Dazed, Nylon, W Magazine, and more. And Mandy, I love that you create fashion stories through the lens of cultural commentary. And you also weave in a historical element with your trend forecasting. So I love that you're simultaneously looking forward and looking to the past as well. And we'll get into your content creation and what you do. But I'd love to hear a little bit about how you describe yourself as a slow fashion creator and trend analyst. What do you do?
Wow, what a amazing, ego-inflating introduction. Thank you. Yeah, I guess I mean, that pretty much summed it up, really. I would describe myself in the fashion, you know, niche. I mostly focus on analytical fashion content with trends, with runway, just really with anything. And then I also, just as like a passion, it's not necessarily, you know, my knowledge base or experience, but I also love just digging into like cultural trends online, because, you know, being like a, you know, I think like all millennials, we had like a little like computer room like way back in the day, and I was on MySpace, I was on like Zanga. So I've been through all the sort of like app phases and just watching social media really change and shape the world and how fashion changes with it. I find that really, really fascinating. And then just like behavior online and what it means and asking questions. You know, I am an expert in certain areas, but I'm always learning. So a lot of my content is conversational and hopefully, you know, opens up discourse and isn't just like, this is my take and I'm right. That's really not how I like to approach making content. It's not how I feel. But yeah, that's kind of like just a little bit about what I do. And then I went freelance in March of this year. So we're coming up on a year of being out on my own, which has been really cool just to have that experience. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I also very fondly remember the computer room and just getting online and just like seeing what's out there. And I love that you've spent almost a year now out on your own. And you also, before March of 2022, you were working in various roles and corporate settings, and you had a life before becoming a full-time mm-hmm. creator. And I'm curious about how you became interested in fashion and freelancing, and if that was always something that you wanted to do.
Oh man. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I never thought that I would be able to. I know like a lot of creators say that, and I really resonate with that statement because a lot of it is just accidental. It just sort of like happens. And, you know, not everyone with a following can necessarily go freelance. I think it takes a lot of like privilege and financial stability to be able to make that leap. So I'm definitely not like unaware that I benefit from these privileges. Like I went freelance when I was 30. I had a full like decade long career before then, but the stars just sort of lined up. And I saw this video or like heard this like quote, and it's kind of corny, but I do, it kind of explains how this happened, but you don't want to like niche yourself down where it's like, you know, I only talk about this and this is, I won't branch out and do this and that. And I do stay within my niche in fashion, but I have helped create a niche. So I feel like my content grows and changes, and so does the niche. And it's been really interesting to see that grow as I grow too. I was one of the first fashion creators on TikTok to open up this sort of like more analytical deep dive into fashion, and just watching it explode over the last almost 2 years has been just insane to, you know, feel like a kind of pioneer in the space. And that's a huge reason why I was able to go freelance. And like, honestly, a lot of it was just timing. And before then, when my TikTok was really starting to grow, I actually got a different job. Like I had been looking for other jobs because I was working basically like a COVID job while I found something kind of more suited for me, because I had gotten laid off during COVID when like everyone was getting laid off, companies were like downsizing and freaking out. And that was like my dream job. So I was very disheartened and thought that was kind of like it for me. And then I got another job, like basically the same thing that I was doing before I got laid off, planning and product marketing, which is all like very wrapped up in like data and forecasting and like looking at trends to be able to actually create new products and make those products a reality. And like very early on, I think like I was working there for 2 weeks and I was like, this is not going to work. Like I did not get along with my boss. I did not like the blind like obedience that this company sort of expected. And, you know, I'm an Aries, and that really like explains a lot about my personality. I think even in the work setting, like I do not like getting talked down to, and I don't care if you're my manager, like you need to treat me with respect or I'm not going to do as good as I should be doing. And that's kind of what happened. And being in this like really toxic work environment really motivated me to like, I need to get out of here. And then in February, right before I made the decision to quit, I did my first like full on fashion week, where it was like, I was getting invited to all these things. I was making money. I was getting asked to write pieces for different magazines. And I remember it was the day before I was supposed to go back to my full-time job, and I just had like a complete breakdown and was like in tears, like writhing on the floor. And I remember my partner was like, man, you need to quit. Like you need to quit and like take the chance on yourself. So he really pushed me to like take that chance, because I grew up with not a lot of money, no resources, and really like no support from my family. So I've always had this like financial, like fear of financial insecurity. And it really hindered my growth for many, many years. And I still think it's really weird and scary to be out on my own, but it's been like really life-changing to be able to have that freedom and be able to like just work for myself and work on projects that I care about. But that's kind of like the long-winded answer. But to answer your question, I absolutely never thought that this was like a possibility for me. So it is crazy that it's like happening and it's almost been a year. I still can't believe it. Like I wake up every day and I'm just like so like I do not take a single day for granted. I really don't.
Yeah. I'm curious about that transition, like in terms of you had found yourself in a toxic environment and how did you kind of reconcile like, oh, maybe I should go freelance fully or like try to find something else within that realm of planning and product marketing?
Yeah. So I went to school in Boston and I just never left. Like I had always seen myself living in Boston forever. I loved the city and I had always wanted to work in fashion. But again, like growing up with no money, no resources, no connections, and this like really intense fear of financial insecurity, I never thought that like I'd be able to work in fashion. And I reconnected with my now fiance. We had met in 2014, like the month before we were going to graduate and go our separate ways. He moved to New York. I stayed in Boston. And dating long distance was just not something either of us wanted to do. And then I guess three or four years later, we reconnected. We dated long distance for a year. And then he made me feel brave enough to make the decision to move to New York. And it was, yes, we're going to like close the distance on this relationship that we feel like is, you know, forever. And also it's going to give me an opportunity to kind of go after what I want. There's so much more opportunity for fashion in New York than Boston. Like there really wasn't anything of substance. So I really thought that like working in beauty would be a good transition because I had no fashion experience. I'm not blind to the fact that fashion is ruled by like nepotism and connections and privilege, and it still is, but there are ways around it. And I thought that, you know, building my skill set in beauty would be a good transition for fashion because people flip-flop from those industries all the time. So I took a job in forecasting for beauty. I absolutely loved that job. I love the company. I got promoted to work like on product full time. So again, like I was taking basically what I was doing like in planning and forecasting, but actually creating like products for using those forecasts. So it felt like really, even though it was like shampoo, like it's not life changing or anything, but it felt like this is so cool. Like I'm creating things from like my data and like my findings. Like it was just so cool to see those things like come to life. Even like the packaging, like we're finding this is popular with consumers. Consumers like these colors. Let's make it into the packaging. And like just those little decisions just really fired me up. And again, that was the job I got let go from at the beginning of COVID. And I had never not had a job since I was like 14 or 15. So I was like really lost without direction. And that's the day I got let go. I downloaded TikTok. Like it just, I didn't know what else to do. Everyone was like talking about it. It was like the new thing because people were like bored as hell. We couldn't do anything. And it was sort of like my escape. And I didn't start making content for like months after, but that was sort of my like introduction. And then my content really started to take off about a year later in like the spring of 2021, summer 2021. And that's when I had been working like a placeholder job. And then I got another job in beauty because again, I was like, I don't think I'm like, I just wasn't confident that I could land a job in fashion, to be honest. And at that point, I had been working in the industry for long enough that I was making like a decent salary. And I just did not want to take a pay cut, especially during, you know, COVID was still pretty intense and I was scared. I was really scared. So I just took a senior manager role in beauty, doing planning. And like the vibes were, you know, all my interviews were remote. I didn't get really like a glimpse of the company. And then like as soon as I stepped into the office, I was like, this is so not going to work. And then I just could never like commit fully to that job. It was a lot of like, how do I say this like civilly? It was a lot of like hypocritical behavior from the directors. I remember I had been working there for like 2 months and my manager and I were having like our one-on-one, and she had always been like very cold and sort of like snappy towards me. And mind you, this is a senior position rooted in analysis. Like I was essentially a senior analyst in this vertical. Mm-hmm. And she straight up told me that I was too analytical and it was slowing me down. And I remember sitting there being like, that's crazy that this is like negative feedback, because this is what's actually like getting me so much attention and like recognition on TikTok. Like it was the same feedback, negative, but that was actually what was like propelling me forward in this other area. So I remember after that meeting, I was like, I am done. Like I am like quiet quitting or whatever people are calling it. And yeah, that's really like how I honestly think I have like some amnesia about this time, because like I had my first like panic, like full blown writhing on the bathroom floor for 3 hours, sobbing, hysterical for the first time in like 5 years because of that job. Like it was really not good for my mental health. And I felt like I was like working 2 full-time jobs because I was trying to make this happen on TikTok. I was trying to do interviews and, you know, you're not getting paid for interviews or podcasts or anything. So I was like giving my time and investing my time into these things and then having to like also do at least my bare minimum work. And it was just, it was not a good time. But then Fashion Week and the encouragement of my partner really, you know, helped me feel confident that I'm ready for the next steps. And I don't think I was ready. Like I still like have no idea what I'm doing. It's really like I really struggle with scheduling and like the admin portion of freelance. Like I'm very bad at like getting my invoices out and scheduling things, but I'm learning. That part of the job does not come easy to me. So it's been really challenging in those areas. But again, like it's a very like privileged position to be in, that I can like work with these companies, and I also do consulting and writing on top of content. So that's been like the most satisfying part. I basically do content so I can do the other things that I really want to do, because writing, you don't get paid. Consulting, you know, those projects time out pretty quickly. So I kind of supplement with content. But yeah, it's been really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds like through that experience, like you were told by your manager the skills that you have that are essentially making you successful now are not being valued here. And you essentially went where you were being valued and where you could see that like direct impact to the skills that you had, to your followings and your content that was being positively received. I'm also curious, you talked about how the day you were let go, you started posting on TikTok. And I love that. It's almost like the space was created for you to jump into something new that would eventually become your main platform. And you're posting for about a year before you get your new job and before you start becoming viral. And I'm curious, like, what was going through your mind when you were posting? And you originally started with going through contents of your bag, right? And I'm curious, like what were you thinking about and like what was going through your mind?
Well, I love that the first video I ever posted was what's in my stash bag. Like that was like purely shit posting. Like I didn't know how to use the app. It took me like an hour to figure out how to put text in my video. And I mean, again, like every couple of months, the app really changes, the like the attitude on the app really changes. But I guess like for the first, so from like, when was this? I guess like in May of 2020 through February 2021, I was just shit posting. I didn't have an audience. It was just like, I don't even think I was like talking about fashion. I was just like posting my little like DIYs, like just like random things, doing like audios, like very like typical, I guess, like fashion or typical TikTok content. And then something interesting happened at the beginning of 2021 where these videos, I kept getting these videos about like trends I hate and just like talking about like things in fashion that they hate. And they're all like really popular things at the time. And I was like, this is like really interesting because I am very put off by videos like this. And it's like a, it's kind of like a rule I have on my page is I don't just like shit on things, because I don't personally like them, or I try not to. And it's just not really the kind of content I like to make. And I noticed that there was like a huge lack of sort of like critical thinking when it comes to fashion. And then the first video I ever made that, you know, this is what I consider to be like when I started TikTok, I made it in April 2021. And I was talking about how kind of like the current state of the trend cycle and how it's sort of destined to implode in on itself because there are so many trends happening at once, so many micro trends specifically at the time, and how, you know, sort of personal style will reign supreme. I think those are like the words I used. And that video, like, it exploded in a way that I can't even describe because it wasn't just the views that made it viral. It was the discourse and language that also went viral. Like, I got hundreds and hundreds of stitches. I started hearing like the vocabulary and the phrasing that I use that I kind of consider like original to me being used by tons and tons of people. And it's just like, holy shit. Like, to me, that's more impactful, much more impactful than, you know, getting like 3 million views on like a lip syncing video. Like, people have listened to what I have to say. They're thinking about it. They're critically engaging with it. They're talking about it. Like, they're adding to the conversation. Like, that was amazing. Still, that's one of like the top moments I've ever had on the app. And I had, that was like the first video I feel like that really propelled me forward. And that's still one of like the best moments I've ever had. That video changed my life. And I think it really changed the overall like attitude, and it just opened up this dialogue and conversation on the app that it hadn't seen before. And I'm still like, I'm really proud of being able to contribute that to the app and just the conversation.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you're really adding your unique perspective and then getting recognition for that. And it sounds like you had like a really good viral moment. Is that how you would describe it? Like, you, that video changed your life and you're very aware and grateful and proud of that. I'm curious, like, how going viral changed your thoughts about being a content creator. How did it change like your path or like your identity even?
It changed everything. It gave me sort of like a building block to jump off of, really. It was like kind of the conduit between shitposting, really, like just kind of doing whatever and then taking it seriously, because it felt, at the time, it felt really important because, again, people were not having these conversations on TikTok at the time. It just, nobody was doing it. And then I started to just build off of that and talking about, I really started out like talking a lot about personal style and the trend cycle as a whole, and then sort of like analyzing different like aesthetics and different trends more critically. And then I felt comfortable enough to sort of do what I do at work, which was sharing my trend forecasts. I had a couple, you know, I had a decent amount of videos go viral, and I had always had like a pretty positive experience. There were like, you know, a couple snarky like comments here and there. But again, like when I first started out, the dialogue and feedback was alarmingly positive, like alarmingly. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I had this like armor almost. And then that summer, so we're at summer 2021 now, I posted one of my first like fully researched and very personal trend forecast video that I had been working on for like 3 months at the time. And I had, this was when I predicted ballet flats and ballet mm-hmm. platforms, bloomers, and I think like the oversized like blazer and suit jacket. And then I also talked about the WGSN color predictions at the end of it, because they had just featured me in their newsletter. And that was like huge, huge, huge for me. And like, I feel like listing these like trends now is like, well, yeah, obviously those are trends now. But a year and a half ago, that was absurdity to most people. And that video, I think, got like 4 million views. So like, I was in tears for like a week, because that I did not get alarmingly positive feedback on that video. A lot of people thought I was insane, that I was like punking them, that I'm like not like of this earth or whatever, like, because these ideas and these forecasts are so like wildly out there to the average person. And then but that's the thing about like, I don't really do forecasting anymore, because the space has really changed and I don't like the direction it's gone in. But at the time, this was like a real forecast, because you didn't see the evidence. So it's like, how can people believe this without solid evidence of seeing it in their daily life and seeing it online and stuff? And then sure enough, like a year later, all these trends are happening. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, no kidding. I am good at my job. Like, I do know what I'm talking about. Of course they are. But at the time, like when you're actually making like a real forecast and not just like talking about like what's actually trending with like solid evidence, it does sound crazy to a lot of people. And yeah, that video changed my life also in the way that I like share things and the way I like kind of brace myself for mm-hmm. virality. Because I think if you ask any creator, when their videos go viral beyond their niche and beyond their like audience, it is bad. It's a bad time. It's a bad time. Mm. Like, it's
why? Why would you say it's a bad time? Or like, how have you felt that bad time?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I remember posting that video like in the late afternoon. And then the next day, my fiance and I were at the farmer's market, and I like had to sit down on a bench, and like, I was like hyperventilating. Like I was so freaked out, because people were like stitching it, being like, what the fuck is this girl talking about? Like, she's fucking crazy. And then there were a lot of parodies of like people making videos like, I'm a professional trend forecaster and here's what's going to be trending. Like, what? And it's like a joke video. And I just wasn't prepared for that, because before then, every video I had go viral was like very positive, and like really the feedback was really good and positive. But this was like, it scared the shit out of me. And then it also made me realize, like, you know, I kind of had like a face-to-face reality check with like the realities of going viral and like putting your ideas out there. And even though they weren't out there for me, because that's my bread and butter, that's what I've been doing for like 7 years, is forecasting and planning and looking mm-hmm. beyond like what's happening currently. It was very new for a lot of people. And also, nobody was doing trend forecasting at the time on TikTok either. So it was like a new niche for people. It was also like a new concept. And then it's introducing them to things that sound crazy at the time. But like now, it's like everyone from like Kendall Jenner to Barbie Ferreira has worn bloomers. companies are like making them. And at the time, I couldn't even find like a good image of them. I had to go on Etsy to put in my video. And then ballet flats are like arguably the most popular item of the season. They're like the most like kind of blown up trend right now. The Miu ballet flats was right. The number one consumer search for and purchase product of Q3.
Wow.
And again, this was like a year and a half ago. So I, you know, as much as I would like love to be happy because it's like, I told you so, it doesn't feel like that at all, you know, because it's like, it's not like anyone really like, I know a handful of people remember and I've gotten like messages on Instagram being like, I've actually gotten one of my favorite messages I've ever received has been from somebody who left a hate comment. I don't know what it was because they didn't include it, but they were like, hey, like I left a really nasty comment on that video from last summer. And I just want to say like, I'm really sorry. And again, I don't know what this person said. They didn't like screenshot their comment, but I don't even care what they said because that was like very kind and really nice to hear because it's like, hello, like Mandy was right all along.
Yeah.
And then later, a couple months later, I predicted Indie Sleaze. And then now, I mean, that video has gotten ripped off. It's gotten written about by every digital publication. It's become a monster, you know, way beyond me. You know what I mean? Like I introduced the internet to Indie Sleaze as a trend and it's taken off beyond my wildest expectations. And that was crazy. And then, you know, the attitude and trajectory of fashion is becoming like, it's so obvious clearly now that it's, you know, become more darker, more moodier, you know, even like having Wednesday Addams like come into the picture just really like helped solidify it. The new Celine show was like straight out of, you know, 2012. It's just, it is crazy because sometimes I'm like, you know, can't predict the future. Like I have this data and experience behind me to back it up, but you never really know how it's going to happen. Right. So it is crazy to see like the accuracy, but again, it's like hard to be like, told you so, when, you know, the response has sometimes been like really frightening and scary. But that's, you know, I think the biggest thing I've learned is once you put something out there and it goes viral, it's not yours anymore. And it's also not yours to change. Because, you know, you can say whatever you want and then it goes viral, but people can spin it a different way and, you know, make it something it's not. And just, it just, I don't know, it's crazy. You don't own it. It might have been your idea, but you don't own it. It does not belong to you. And that's been, you know, I think the most important thing that like I've learned too is none of this belongs to me. It's way beyond my scope. When I put it out there, the second I put it out there, it's out of my hands.
Yeah. And it's like it takes on a life of its own.
Absolutely. It does.
And does that make you feel like less attached to what you put out there and knowing like somebody may take it and spin it totally differently entirely, or as you were saying, like magazines take it and rip off of it. Like, how do you then relate to your work and navigate that sense of ownership?
I mean, it's a good question. And I actually don't think I have the answer for that because I've gone back and forth where, you know, I've, you know, said things and then I don't want to be part of them anymore. You know, it's just simply like sharing an idea and then it's out there, I'm done. But I really have like an issue with plagiarism. I'm not sure I even know how to define plagiarism online. I honestly don't think it exists. And it's just a personal pet peeve of mine. You know, you can lead with, you know, having good ethics and wanting to give people credit, but it's not like a requirement. And, you know, people have ripped off my videos and gotten like, you know, millions of more views. Even like there's this like professional trend forecasting company that has literally taken my videos, added a couple more words and used different pictures, but like the copy is like the exact same and they're supposed to be a professional service. It's like, it's, that's been crazy to see. And I feel like it's more like, I don't like the plagiarism, because what really drew me to TikTok and the community is these conversations and helping facilitate conversations and discourse and ideas and sharing them and having people expand on them and things like that. That's what I love. I don't like getting plagiarized. It's like my least favorite thing as a writer, as a creator, like have more respect for people than that. But that just, it's not a requirement of the internet. Nobody is like held to these like expectations that you're not supposed to like copy other people and come up with your own shit. But I think what helps me is remembering I am original and my originality is what, you know, got me here. My ideas, I can stand behind them and I know they're mine. They're, of course, inspired by many things, but I feel like I operate with integrity. And, you know, I've made many mistakes on TikTok. I've done things that I wouldn't do again, but I feel like I always lead with integrity. And that helps me, you know, take next steps and feel good about the content that I'm making. And at the end of the day, it's not life or death. Like, it's literally making silly little videos on an app about fashion. Like, I'm a speck in the universe. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, yeah. You know, and I'm making a living. So I'm happy with that. And, you know, just getting the opportunity to like work with brands that would never know I exist without this app. Like, it's, you know, the good outweighs the bad for sure, for sure. And that's never not like some days are frustrating, but like, the good always outweighs the bad. And I don't take, like I've said this before, but I really do not take a second for granted, because I like remember how miserable I was a year ago. And it's just like, this is entirely better than working for somebody I don't respect, working for a company that doesn't give a shit about like my insights. Like, I can't even pay my assistant overtime. Like, this is way beyond better. So the good really does outweigh the bad.
And I also love that you feel so grounded in yourself. And it sounds like if you're relying on your integrity and your unique perspective that you can add, then you always have that to fall back on, even if someone takes your work. I am curious about these experiences of being plagiarized. Is that why you are moving away from trend forecasting?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a huge, huge reason. It's almost like not worth it, because that's the thing that I know triggers me the most. And it's my responsibility to deal with that. Like, again, this is the internet, that nobody is held to any particular rules. That's a me problem. It's not like it's hard to even like blame people who do steal my work. Because if you've been paying attention, like, the reason why I got verified is because of how much press I got from, you know, digital publications who do recognize my work. Like, and, you know, I just feel like the space has changed so much, like, in the last year. Indie Sleaze happened in October 2021, so it's been over a year, and I've made like a couple more trend forecasting videos since then. But, you know, I feel like ever since like Indie Sleaze happened, it's created this like desire from other creators to like do trend forecasting, because again, like, I think it's important for creators to pay attention to like what's working for other creators if you're taking it seriously. And I'm sure others have noticed the success it's brought me. And it's just, I hate to use the word like amateur hour, but it is how I feel, because I approach this from 7 years of professional experience. So I take it more seriously than, you know, somebody who's doing it for shits and gigs to go viral. Right. And again, like, I think the integrity I have for my career has just, it's just prevented me from wanting to continue, because I don't want, and what was happening like earlier this year and like throughout the spring is I was getting like lumped in with this like very amateur surface level version of forecasting that's become popular on TikTok. And I do not fit in with that niche. Like what I'm doing is not the same thing as that. But, you know, I don't blame other people for not recognizing that if you're not approaching it as a professional. So, you know, things have just changed and I don't want to be lumped in with amateur hour. I really don't. And that's up to me to deal with, not up to like the internet to go to bat for me, even though people have, which I really appreciate. And I think it's like amazing that my community is so strong that like people are willing to do that. But the thing is, and I think anyone who like started TikTok coming from like a professional lens and just like random people who like want to make fun videos, like it feels weird to be lumped in with that. Mm-hmm. And it's no fault of other users to like to want that. It's just I don't like it. And it's my problem to deal with, it's not the internet or other creators' job to like stop doing it or stop consuming it. It's just I'd rather not do anything than, you know, be looked at as like an amateur. I hate that idea for me. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a little ego too, because I helped start the niche and the niche has become something I don't like. And yeah, it's definitely a little bit of that too.
Yeah. And how do you know, or like, when do you realize that you're being lumped into like amateur hour or any category that you don't want to be associated with or you would like to distance yourself from? And then like, what's your decision process for trying to kind of move away from that? And also talking about your fans, like going to bat for you. And what does that look like for you?
Let's see. That's a really good question. I guess like I recognized it when I was getting like served a lot of like trend prediction videos from other people. And it was like things that either I've talked about like over a year ago, because like now most people can sort of see them happening. So it's sort of like safe and palatable to talk about them. And you're not going to get nearly as much hate and backlash like I did. Because again, you're talking about something that people can actually see, but that's not a prediction. That's not the same thing. It's not a forecast. It's just you're observing the world around you and regurgitating that into something that's like an entertaining video. It's not the same thing. And that sort of bothered me. And then, oh God, what really like, I do have a pinpoint moment. There's this podcast called Articles of Interest, and they're doing like the host is incredible. She's like an amazing, amazing podcaster. She's been in business for a long time and her videos are like very well researched and thought out. I just respect her a lot. And she has this new show called Articles of Interest talking about the origins of Ivy League style. And in like the intro, she was talking about like about trends basically. And she took a bunch of audios from TikTok and my words from like, I think it was the Indie Sleeves video was getting lumped in to like all these other like bullshit amateur hour like videos. I don't know who they were from because again, it's an audio medium. It's hard to tell, but like just feeling like I was literally lumped in like into this like little compilation, like that felt so, that was like very painful for some reason. Like, I think it was just because like, oh fuck, now this like person that I really respect is like using my voice as like an example of like the oversaturation of how trends are being talked about. And also that's another thing is like, I don't want to contribute to like this oversaturation where it becomes like meaningless. And that's what was happening. And it was very hard to come to terms with, because again, this is a niche I helped create. It's an industry I've worked in for a long time, and it's something I'm passionate about. But I think it's important to know when you gotta stop, or you gotta change it up, or you gotta pivot, because it's mm-hmm. no longer serving you. And that's sort of just how I felt. And then I guess, like, I have a lot of mutuals and I have a lot of followers that are familiar with my work. I don't need to prove myself. I think I've done that like more times over than, you know, anyone really needs to believe my research is valid and accurate. And people will tag me in videos that are like clearly copying my past forecasts. And yeah, it's like people can never slip through the cracks, because like my followers will find a way to send it to me. It's happened more times than I can count. And, you know, I'm appreciative, but at this point I don't care. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm over it. And I think one day I will go back to making that content again, but it just right now does not feel like it's serving me. It's serving anybody, really. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just not inspired to make it. That's also a huge part of it, is
right.
The inspiration is kind of zapped right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious about how you talked about there are perhaps mistakes that you feel that you've made, or content that you don't want to create again, whether that be forecasting or other types of content. And you also post about the fact that you have made mistakes and you are showing a different side of your content creation process. Can you talk a little bit about that and like how you connect with your audience in terms of content that you're moving away from, or mistakes that you feel that you've made?
Oh man, yeah. One really sticks out to me, and I still feel very like shameful about this, even though I know like this person like has probably not thought about me since this happened. But there is a creator who also was like very early with fashion history. I really respect his knowledge and I really looked up to him. And this was like the summer of 2021. So again, like the space was extremely small. And the creators who were making this content, it was a really small circle. So we all kind of like knew each other, whether we were mutuals or not. It was like, I felt like I was familiar with everybody in this space. And then he made this series of videos where he was like kind of giving like really quick identifiers on how to identify like a brand. And then I remember seeing it. And then it was like a couple months later, I kind of ripped off his idea. I made it like a little different, but when I was making it, I wasn't like, I'm going to copy this guy. It was just like, I was a little drunk, to be honest. And I was like, this will be so funny. And he commented, because somebody tagged him and was like, oh, this is like really disappointing to see. Like, this is my series. And my heart sank. Because I was like, oh my God, I remember that so clearly. Yes. And I think that situation, I made like a whole video, like apologizing for it and being like, this was the person who created this series. Like, they should get credit for it, because my video blew up. And like, I've been in the position where somebody's stolen my content and it's blown up and they don't credit me or give a shit. Really. And it's very disheartening. And I tried to make that situation right and publicly apologize, but I will never forget it. That was like one of probably the lowest moments I've ever had on the app. I just felt so like wrong for doing that, like for not crediting someone, because I believe in credit so much. Like, it's not hard to do. And also, like, if you're making a video inspired by somebody, stand by your originality. You might have gotten the idea from somebody else, but like, it's okay to riff off of other creators. Like, that's what the app is for. But like, give credit where credit is due. Like I do it all the time now, all the time. And it feels good to help, especially like small creators too. Like a tag goes so far for smaller creators to get noticed. And I have never made that mistake again, and I never will. And it's why I feel so like passionate, I guess, about credit and originality and things like that. Like I will just never forget that feeling of like, oh my, like I did something wrong. I did not, you know, again, like I said, there are no hard and fast rules on the internet. You can do whatever you want, but that did not sit right with me. It didn't sit right with me, and I regret it to this day. I've never talked to this person. I reached out to them. They never got back to me, and I don't blame them, honestly, because that was fucking shitty. And I learned my lesson, and yeah, I don't know. I'm glad it happened pretty early on, because this is something like the app deals with every day, where people like blatantly steal other people's ideas. They don't credit them. It becomes like a whole thing, like a whole scandal where like everyone's talking about it. I don't do it to avoid that backlash. I do it because karma has gotten me from that experience, where it's happened to me more times than I can count. And it is a terrible feeling being on both sides, honestly, like knowing you did something wrong.
Right.
But yeah, I really believe in credit. And it's also like, I think it's really fun to like bounce things off of other creators. And it's like, I heard this person talk about this. Here's what I have to say, or like this really fun format. I'm going to do it too, like, because it's just kind of like fun. But yeah, I don't know. That's just, I hate thinking about that, because it was like a very low moment. But yeah, that's something I will never do again. It was definitely a mistake. I'm not going to, you know, make that mistake again. It felt really shitty, and it just wasn't worth it. Like what did it didn't gain me anything, really. Like views are not worth, you know, I don't know. It's weird how certain things, like, you know, hate comments about how people like think my hair is raggedy or I have no top lip or whatever. Like they don't, I close the app and I don't think about them again. But certain things, it's like, oh fuck, like this got me, and I'm thinking about it in real life and stuff like that. It's really like my integrity and my ethics, because a lot of it is like new. You know what? Like, you know what I mean? Like nobody tells you like how to feel or like how to navigate stuff like this. It's like almost like you're learning for the first time on how to like navigate these situations and these spaces. I don't know what to say. I don't know if I should address this. Like, what do I do? Blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I don't know. It takes a lot of learning. It really does. And that's the other thing, is like, I'm sure a lot of the times it is like no bad intentions. Like I didn't have any bad intentions. I felt kind of like stupid, because it's like, I maybe should have known better. And maybe it was my responsibility to do my due diligence. But you know, now it's kind of like down to a science almost.
Thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Mandy. And you can find her on TikTok and Instagram at Old Loser in Brooklyn. And also be on the lookout for her newsletter, Cyclical. And be sure to check out the second part of this conversation next week, which explores more about Mandy's perspectives on the fashion industry, and really is just an interesting conversation about the industry and thoughts about working in fashion or content and lifestyle creation. And if you liked this episode, I would love to know. Send me a message or comment on my Instagram at multitudes.podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you soon.